Now, it's time for a little R&R.
Ball into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Live in the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy! Light him up, Colin!
Pack Tuesday ahead of us on ESPN 106.3. It's October. You know what that means. October baseball officially underway. Detroit Tigers taking on the Houston Astros in Houston at the moment. Two-game doubleheader of Monday Night Football we had last night. An excellent doubleheader we had between the Mets and the Braves. Lot to talk about, lot to do. Pete Rose, the hit king, passes away at 83 years of age last night. Should be a whole lot to do. Next 2 hours, you're with us, Russo and Rizzo, live here, ESPN 106.3. My name is Colin Russo. Joined alongside me is Mike Rizzo with Christian Catt, joining us behind the glass at the City Play Studios here in downtown West Palm Beach. Mike, how you doing today?
Good, partner. We got baseball starting today. I already love the cheating Astros. You know, off to a 3-0 start, 0-3 start, rather. Detroit up 3-0 in that game. Looking forward to the rest of the baseball throughout the rest of the night. I told you I'll probably be at the gym a little bit for that Mets game, but at 8:30, man, I'll be locked in for that Atlanta Braves game, and plenty of Monday Night Football to react to as well, partner. I mean, one team certainly on their way to being one of the worst teams in the NFL from the looks of it, and then a pretty good game in the other game. So,
yeah, pretty good game. I think that the Seattle played well, all things considered. You just caught the Lions in a picture-perfect game. I think everything was working for them. And that's the type of situation where that's an impossible spot to win that game. As for the Dolphins side of things, boy, oh boy, we mentioned it last week. It sounds like it's getting worse. They lose in dramatic fashion. I wouldn't call anything about that game actually dramatic. But a disgusting fashion to the Tennessee Titans at home with Snoop Huntley at quarterback for them. And the Titans didn't even have Levis for a quarter, it seems like.
Right.
Mason Rudolph comes in and guides them to victory.
And, you know, Rudolph had a lot of playing experience last year for the Steelers. If I remember correctly, he started that playoff game in Buffalo. So
he has experience.
Yeah, this is a guy who could come in and do a serviceable job. But, you know, with the talent that is on Miami's defense, with the money that they spent on the defense. Now, I know they let Wilkins walk. You know, he's in Vegas now, but they have pieces on the defense. They have pieces on the offense. I'm really surprised this is as bad as it is. And a lot of people blaming the head coach today, Colin.
I'm not surprised at all. And I think because of the point you just mentioned, that is why I'm not surprised. Mike McDaniel is not in any way, shape, or form, in my book, an above-average head coach.
Wow.
Not even a question in my mind at this point. You want to bring up the quarterback? Tua not playing and the concussion and everything, they were completely unmotivated. They didn't even bother showing up. And this is the third game of this. They didn't even bother. They were terrible against Buffalo. They barely escaped that Jacksonville game week one, and Jacksonville's sitting there at 0-4.
One of the worst teams in football.
And the worst. And all of a sudden, you have a terrible game last week and then a terrible game last night. This is to me, so reflective of the management altogether. I know everybody wants to blame Chris Greer and Stephen Ross. We'll get to our poll question in a second. It relates to this. But Mike McDaniel is sitting there on the sideline in his hoodie with the 1,000-yard stare, staring into the abyss as players are losing their minds on the sideline about touches and not getting properly involved and why are we falling behind. And he is sitting there doing nothing. I cannot take him seriously. McDaniel is, to me, very much entered into play in that 1A hot seat ranking.
Mm.
More than Saleh, in my book. More than Saleh, up there with Peterson. That's where I stand on Mike McDaniel and basically the entire management of the Miami Dolphins. That was a disgraceful, disgraceful loss.
They've made the playoffs 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Right? That's why I think McDaniel probably has a bigger leash. Now, they haven't done anything in the playoffs. Every Dolphin fan that I talk to always talks about the lack of wins in the playoffs. What is it, Colin? The 90s since the last time they won a playoff game? But I think in the sense of regular season success and making the playoffs, I think McDaniel could survive the year. We had an interesting conversation in our pre-show meeting because I actually came out with the take of, you know, this is what happens when you lose your franchise quarterback.
I don't think it is.
And to your point, it didn't see to you and, you know, Brian Rowitz, who we were all in the meeting. You saw Cleveland last year. You saw my Browns do it with Joe Flacco. I just mentioned Mason Rudolph, right? Mason Rudolph. I know Kenny Pickett was a starter last year. We all know he's not a starter.
Bengals won.
But he was a backup.
Bengals won games last year.
Yeah, with the kid from Washington.
Browning.
So I say that, but at the same time, I understand the criticism you guys give me on it. I'm trying to find an excuse for McDaniel because I actually do think McDaniel is a good coach. I just think he needs a particular quarterback, and I don't think Snoop Huntley and I don't think Skylar Thompson are that particular quarterback. And you want to know what his particular quarterback is? A guy who could chuck it 50 yards deep to Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. They don't have that guy.
That's gimmicky.
They don't have that guy.
That is so gimmicky to me.
That's his offense, though, Colin.
That's the thing. It's gimmicky. That's why it's not working.
And he can't
run
the football.
That's why it gets shut down after September every single year.
Now, something I will give stock to that we could critique McDaniel about. They can't run the ball.
Chapman, it's so inconsistent is the right word for that. Yeah.
Snoop Huntley was the leading rusher last night with 40 yards on 8 carries.
And it's weird because last year they saw not a tremendous amount of success pre-Achane and post-Achane, that injury with Mostert as well. They are so gimmicky, reliant on the big play. There was no sense of fluid offensive drives that they could put together. This is a very reflective loss. Once again, as last week as well, too, because they didn't even bother showing up. A very reflective loss on Mike McDaniel.
You don't think it's just one of those years?
Mike, this team was 0-3 at home. I mean, this team was 0-3 on the road. Titans with a backup quarterback, and they won 31-12. This is reflective in a whole lot. He lost locker room. He's not motivating these guys. And I understand this is not an easy group. This is not an easy roster to motivate, in my opinion, because of all the brooding personalities that you have clashing there. And personalities that love stats and individual success and have been problematic in the past in locker rooms. McDaniel has no sense of navigation of that. This is a major, major problem they got in Miami.
96 yards passing for Huntley. 96 yards passing. Is this the Michigan offense?
Terrible.
Is this the Michigan Wolverine offense of this year where they plan on running the ball 50 times a game? Achane, 10 carries for 15 yards. Colin. 10 carries for 15 yards.
Terrible.
You're not. And
one of the worst games I've watched in a long time.
And we called it. You know, we talked to Zaslow yesterday. Zaz is like, yeah, you know, I'm going on down to do a little tailgating. We're like, for this one, brother? You're tailgating for this game?
Now here's the real question, I think. Here is where the Dolphins should start thinking a little, at least the fans, should start thinking a bit reflectively on where this team stands. In my opinion, you heard what I think, about Mike McDaniel. But there's people that like to blame Chris Greer, the general manager. There's people that like to blame the Dolphin player for this. So, you know, no Tua, bad luck, if you even will. Some people want to blame Stephen Ross, the owner. Now, I want to ask you, the fans, polls up at ESPN West Palm on X. Who is most to blame for the Dolphins' woes so far? Is it McDaniel? Is it Chris Greer, Stephen Ross, or is it the players? What does that pie chart of blame lie for you? Let us know. Phone lines are open, 888-760-3776. That's 888-760-3776. I'm on Team McDaniel. It sounds like you're Team Player here.
I kind of am. I mean, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Achane, decent enough offensive line.
Well, that's
talent
why.
On
that,
defense.
That's
you got
to
figure it out.
Well, that's why.
Brother, you got to come together.
That's not a player thing, then. They have the talent. That's why.
You got to strap yourself up by the bootstrap bill. And look at that locker room and go, let's go.
I know. That's why I can't blame the player there. It's hard to blame them there. It's because the coaching is not putting them in a situation to win.
I don't know. I think McDaniel, you know what you're getting with McDaniel. McDaniel is
do
a,
we?
You do.
He hasn't won a big game.
McDaniel is a kumbaya coach who's never going to yell at his players. That's the coach Mike McDaniel is. And listen, if you want to blame McDaniel, that's fine. And very, very much so. But I think when you sign up to play these players, when you sign up to play for Mike McDaniel, you know he's not going to be a get in your face, screw you guys, you're not doing good. Like, these players know the expectations that are on them on a Mike McDaniel football team. They have the, I would say, luxury of probably getting more rope than they deserve with Mike McDaniel as a head coach.
Yeah, sure. That's the problem.
He's a player's coach.
That's the problem.
And you have a problem with him being a player's coach. I have a problem with the players like Tyreek Hill.
You're putting too much stock into the players here.
Tyreek Hill said he talks to his therapist and he's not going to throw a fit on the sideline. What was last night then? What was last night?
So this is Tyreek Hill's problem though?
No, it's a collection of everything. That's one case right there. Is that Hill says one thing. And then another thing happens. And do you want to know what's not going to help? And I like him as a player. This isn't me personally attacking him. Odell Beckham Jr. coming into the fold here when he's healthy, I don't think it's going to help much. He's another player who's going to want the ball. I feel like him in Baltimore was the perfect storm because you had a coach like Harbaugh and you had a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, who's the leader of the team, and he's going to put people in their place when they have to. They don't have those presence right now.
I think you're putting too much stock into what these players really pull here in terms of the decisions and the movements within the actual team itself. Greer put the team together. Clearly, this is not a roster that is built together in terms of any sense of winning. And McDaniel can't put the pieces together actually on the chessboard.
We could blame McDaniel and Greer for the quarterback situation. I'll agree with you there. They thought Skylar Thompson and Snoop Huntley, I know they signed him off the street, but they thought that was going to be enough for an injured-prone quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa. Maybe you should have thought of a better contingency plan.
And what about the offensive line? They're getting banged around, so they didn't address the offensive line, and the defense is just based on a couple star names, and that's really it.
Now, if we want to play blame game, I can't necessarily say McDaniel runs the defense. He's an offensive guy.
Sure.
So we could look at the defensive coordinator
that's my point to Greer.
And Greer. But I think players, the problem here is it's a collection of everything, obviously. But McDaniel has proved when he's got his guy at quarterback, he's able to win games. The Dolphins never really had a defense to write home about in the first place. Now, it's been better than the crap we've seen in the first 4 weeks. But I think if Tua was at the helm, I dare say this game is different. I think he'd be able to throw gimmick. Wow. I think the gimmick offense, Colin, that you talk about, the 60-yard touchdowns,
what happened in the first half against Buffalo,
passes. Mike?
What happened in the first half against Buffalo? They were terrible. They couldn't even move the ball. They couldn't move the ball against Jacksonville for half the game.
Buffalo has historically had their number for years.
Okay, what about Jacksonville? First half against Jacksonville without the ETN fumble, without that Tyreek Hill 80-yard gimmick offensive play touchdown. Without that, they lose that game as well. This is not just a Tua thing. This is a Mike McDaniel has been officially, the blueprint's out. The people know what they're dealing with him. Opposing coaches, that is. They're catching up. If you are an offensive-minded head coach, you have to be able to apply some sort of pressure and at least play with some guts. Because if your offense isn't working and offense is not guaranteed to work, doesn't matter what coach you are. Shanahan, doesn't matter. LaFleur, doesn't matter who you are. The offense will get sometimes it's going to get figured out. What do you have to back on if you're the head coach? You're the leader of men. You're the leader of the coaches. You're the coaches of the coaches. He has no ability to navigate that. This is a Mike McDaniel problem. You want to blame Greer? You could even go to Ross. They haven't been great in years. Blame Ross, fine. But this is a McDaniel problem.
Sometimes teams can't get over losing the franchise quarterback. And Tua, say what you want about him. He was the rah-rah captain. And I feel like Tua kind of kept the ship afloat in a sense of, it's not like he's not out of the locker room. I understand that. He's still around. But when you're not playing on the field, I feel like that presence is lost a little bit. And Colin, going back to the Buffalo game, I can't argue, brother. Tua completely played them out of the game with interceptions. Mike McDaniel didn't have his best game calling offense. But I'm going to chalk that up as to a one-game thing. Partner, if Tua was playing, I think things would be closer in these games and they wouldn't look as bad as they do.
There's no doubt
in
my mind.
I'm not going to be quick to hop on Mike McDaniel because he's made the, I know Colin, he hasn't won anything. It's similar to Lamar Jackson conversation we talk about all the time. But this is a coach who's been to the playoffs with an organization that doesn't go to the playoffs 2 years in a row. So that's why I'm more than willing to give him rope here to figure this thing out. If this year isn't your year, embrace the suck.
There's one thing about losing without your starting quarterback and losing but playing tough. This is not that. This is losing and playing soft, playing unmotivated, playing with a lack of passion. That's what this is. This is a much bigger problem than just sliding out the offensive.
You're saying the
offensive play call.
It's on the coach to motivate the guys and have them ready to
go. Yes, yes. Oh my God, it's on the first line of when you sign them. Yes.
Where's the accountability from the players then? They don't want to play.
They're not going to play hard for the coach. The coach holds the players accountable. He's not doing that. You're right. You're playing into the point. He's not doing that.
But on the flip side of things too. These players got to, what? So the players are just going to show up and treat this like Colorado Springs?
What are you saying? What are you talking about? I'm saying the coach is not holding them accountable.
And I'm saying the players need to show up to work and actually care.
I understand. Yes. Oh, my God. We're on the same page here. And who puts the players together? Who is the head?
You know you're not going to get that from McDaniel. You know he's not that kind of coach.
You know they're supposed to sell. You're acting like he's supposed to self-teach.
He gives the players the freedom to do these kind
of
things.
That needs to change. It's not working. It hasn't worked. You're acting like they're supposed to self-coach each other. They're not doing. They have coaches for a reason.
Two straight playoff years. When Tua went out the first time, what was that? 2 years ago. They played decent enough with Bridgewater and company at the helm. Colin, it's one of those years. I just feel like you have these years as an organization, as a coach, as a quarterback, as a team, where you're overrated and things just don't go your way. You're seeing that with a lot of teams this year.
The Bengals are worse than that. The Bengals, you want to bring up you can't even compare the Bengals here because they played the Chiefs tough. They played the Commanders tough. They just don't have a defense. They're playing tough. This is different. They're not even showing up. The Dolphins are a disgrace. They're right there with Jacksonville. And why should McDaniel get some sort of rope here? Because they lost the quarterback, but all of a sudden they play with no guts, with no life? It's pathetic. He should not get any sort of free pass for that.
At the end of the year, you're firing McDaniel right now, 4 games in.
I am so over. I've been over him for weeks.
Okay.
He takes the bulk of this bullet because of what's going on with Miami. Absolutely, without a question. And you want to bring up the roster construction. Maybe they put together some too many brooding personalities. There's an argument there. And maybe the Tua is just not a leader. Maybe there's an argument there as well. But that's a Chris Greer. And maybe it's just an ownership problem. Maybe it's a Stephen Ross thing. Fine. But from what I see game to game, you can't just go all the way up to ownership. And I know I did that with Jacksonville a couple weeks ago. Not every time you can go all the way up to ownership. Ross is sticking around. This is a McDaniel problem.
He is
not bringing the best out of his players because he has multiple Pro Bowl caliber players, multiple former All-Pros. There's probably 6 of them on that team. It's a little different when you don't have talent. They have talent. They're just not utilizing it properly. I know the quarterback's a mess. Play with some guts. Play like you like the sport. Oh, my God. That is a McDaniel problem, and him sitting there, not adjusting, and then being wishy-washy with the media. Sorry, you're taking the fall for this, in my book.
They're a little banged up. I think he's got a bad deck right now. Colin, listen, it's hard to argue with you right now with the points you're bringing up, but I think the players could show a little more fight and a little more accountability because they know the kind of coach McDaniel is. They know that they're going to be able to do more things with McDaniel at the helm than normally with another coach, and they, you know, a lot of these guys were drafted, but a lot of them were brought in too. It's kind of what they signed up for. And not surprising to me that this is a sinking ship right now with the quarterback on. I keep going back to the fact that Tua is gone, and I feel like the season damn near went downhill from there. And he's on IR too. God knows when he's going to be able to come back. Who knows if he's ever going to be able to come back with that head injury. But I don't know. I think it's more than just putting the blame on McDaniel. And it's funny because I had this take yesterday of people on Salah, and I know Salah's side of the team is playing with the defense. Miami's side, both sides aren't playing, and his offense is stagnant with Snoop Huntley at quarterback. If I'm McDaniel, I'm doing everything I can on 3-yard, 2-yard screen passes to Tyreek Hill. I'm running this like a college offense almost, Colin.
Well, that's what it is, a gimmicky offense.
I'm running RPOs, screen passes, but bubble passes to Waddle and Hill.
That's what they did. It's a gimmicky offense, and it's so figured out. There's no methodical. There's no methodicalness. There's none of that. That's the problem. He's too gimmicky.
So you're not willing to give McDaniel another year? This year and the year after.
Listen, it's week 4.
That's what I mean.
I'm not going to call somebody's job, but in terms of blame, that's the question. Blame McDaniel, without a question. And not even a doubt in my mind. I'm surprised you're not on the same page as that.
He's a playoff coach. He's been in the playoffs 2 years in
and
a row.
He hasn't done anything.
I'm a miserable Brown fan, man. I'd love to go to the playoffs 2 years
in a row. And he hasn't done anything
with
all the talent in the world. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3, 888-760-3776. The number to get into the program, that's 888-760-3776. Who is to blame for the Dolphins' woes? Who takes most of it on your pie chart of blame? Is it Stephen Ross, the owner? Is it Chris Greer, the general manager? Is it Mike McDaniel, the head coach? Or is it the Dolphins players? Let us know, 888-760-3776. We continue the conversation next. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Week 4 concluded with two straight Monday Night Football games last night. The Dolphins falling to the Titans 31-12. Ugly one for Miami. Will Levis went down with a shoulder injury, and Mason Rudolph came in replacement. Still guided them to victory. The Lions, on the other hand, pretty much a masterclass offensive performance on their end. Jared Goff was perfect. 100% completion percentage for him. 42-29 final over Seattle. Seattle played pretty well in the game as well. Both those teams are good. I think that's where I stand on that. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3. Mike, where do you stand on what you saw last night in that Lion game on the other side of things?
I think Detroit right now is most likely the top dog in the NFC. You know, with Green Bay losing, I say that, but Minnesota's probably, statistically and according to record, Minnesota probably the best team. But as of right now, my power rankings in the NFC would probably go Lions, Vikings, San Francisco, in that order. I know I picked the Niners to win the Super Bowl before the year. It's a long year, obviously. But right now, man, the Lions are really good. And Jared Goff is really making me eat a crow because I don't think Jared Goff is his Super Bowl quarterback. And, you know, when he comes out and when he have a stat line of 18 for 18, 292 yards and 2 touchdowns and a win on Monday Night Football, it's certainly hard to argue that on a day like this. But I'm more impressed with the weapons they have, too. Jameson Williams, that explosive receiver. Amon Ross St. Brown, the go-to, the guy you're going to on third and short to get a first down. Sam Laporta, probably one of the most athletic tight ends in the NFL. And a pretty loaded defense. On the flip side, Seattle, not as high on Seattle as you are. I need to see, I know I've been saying this about the Vikings too, I need to see Seattle do this for a full 17, but the division that they're playing in is helping them. The Niners are struggling right now. The Rams are struggling right now. I don't know what Arizona is. They're as Jekyll and Hyde as it gets right now. So I get the conversations, but the new head coach for Seattle certainly is showing us something, and that's a 3-1 season and fighting pretty hard on Monday Night Football against the Lions.
I mean, I give Seattle credit losing their head coach here, but they reload in a lot of ways with Mike McDonald coming in there as from the defensive coordinator position in Baltimore. They play with guts. They play with some fight, and they have talent offensively. A couple things that just came out recently: Adam Schefter tweeted that Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel has officially announced that Tyler Snoop Huntley will start again on Sunday when Miami plays New England. Another thing, Ian Rappaport of NFL Network also finally released that Raiders star Davante Adams, we all assume this, but he has informed the team that he preferred to be traded. So Davante Adams is officially on the trade block, and Snoop Huntley will be back under center again for Miami next week against New England. So the definition of insanity is keep trying the same thing and expecting different results. And maybe this is football and things change, but this is Mike McDaniel. Something needs to change. And whether it's coaching, player-wise, whatever, you need to see something different from Miami on Sunday.
You don't think it'll help that we know the starting quarterback before Wednesday?
I don't think it makes a difference, no. I think the opponent matters. I think maybe
for prep and practice and you know, geez, oh man, Tyreek Hill post game and during the game has had a lot to say. Basically, so Kyle, 2 weeks ago, Tyreek Hill said that they have open tryouts and that they were trying Waddle out at quarterback. And then before this game, he was waxing poetically on how Huntley was a Pro Bowler and all that. And then we got that egg on Monday Night Football.
Here's the problem. I don't think Tyreek Hill should be the spokesperson for what's going on at the quarterback position. And that's McDaniel's problem.
Is that not a player's fault, though?
No. That's a Mike McDaniel. That's a Mike McDaniel problem.
He needs to be quiet.
McDaniel's responsible for the players.
Maybe he is saying something to these kids, or excuse me, to these players, Colin, and they're not listening.
Even worse. Even more reason to fire him. If he doesn't, if they're not listening to him, what is he even doing there?
I just think it's a personality like Tyreek Hill, and he's going to do whatever the hell he wants.
You think Jalen Ramsey is being receptive of Mike McDaniel?
He kind of did. Hill did this stuff a little bit with Reed. Now, I don't think,
what are you supposed to do? I mean, if these guys are not listening, get him out. If something's not clicking, get him out. Just because Tua likes him, because Tua is, you know, a high five and cupcakes type of quarterback on his on all of his praises, singing the praises nonstop.
But we found out that, you know, ownership and general management, Colin, had the side of Tua. You know, obviously Brian Flores didn't like him, told him multiple times he didn't even want him. And they're always going to bow to the star player. I don't know if they should. Should they? Should they be bowing to Tua? Is Tua, even, you know, God forbid something else happens to him, but when he's playing, is he a top 10 quarterback? Is he a top 8 quarterback?
No.
Who
knows?
I almost agree with you in a sense of maybe they put their, similar to a couple of teams in the NFL, maybe they put their eggs in the wrong basket. Like the Browns.
Well, hold on a second. Last segment, you were screaming to the clouds about how Tua Tagovailoa missing your franchise quarterback is the greatest devastation to a team you could possibly imagine. And now, 5 minutes later, they put their eggs in the wrong basket with Tagovailoa. Which is it?
It's the injuries. It's because of the injuries. It's not because of his play.
If he's healthy, he's still not a top 12 quarterback. Doesn't matter if he's healthy. I know he has essentially brain damage.
I think Tua could lead you to a 9-win, 10-win, 11-win season. Like he has the last two years.
We've seen that, of course.
And I think when you lose, going back to what we were talking about, I think when you lose a player like that, you lose a lot. And they didn't have... Listen, if you want to... I told you this, too.
So are you questioning that whether they should have signed Tua, or are you not?
Of course I am. But the fact that you're not putting any blame on the players is also crazy to me.
I'm not putting blame on the players. Yeah, sure, the players are not playing tough. I agree. That's a players, you know, being like in their own head, big brand players, big brooding personalities. I get that. But... as we saw, these are players that have succeeded on prior teams. Why is that? It's because things were under steadier navigation and guidance. Any player, Calais Campbell has been on winning teams. Jalen Ramsey has been on winning teams. Tyreek Hill has been on winning teams. Raheem Mostert has been on winning teams. These are all players that are, big personalities living in Miami, making a horrid amount of money, but they've all won. What's different? Guidance. Coach. I whether you want to play, I don't like Tua, that's fine, but this is a major, major problem in leadership that the Dolphins are suffering from. Whether you want to go higher than that, you can, but McDaniel's involved. They have put a ton of talent.
We're running coach out of town today. I'm not ready to run him out. I'm not ready to run him out yet. I know it's been ugly. We're four games in. A lot of it is his fault, but I look to the players more on this. I think I'll say it one more time. You know what you're getting with McDaniel. I think ownership knows that. I think general management knows that. Similar to Tua. That's why what I was saying was, when you don't have a contingency plan for an injured quarterback, when you sign Tua to that deal, you must know that he's going to get injured and that something could pop up. You have to have a contingency plan. But at the same time, the players need to show some fight. Not everything's on the poor head coach, dude. The offense might be right now. The offense stinks and he's directly involved in that.
What is on
96
him?
96 passing.
In your head, what is on him?
The offense. The 96-yard passing. And the thing I told you, the number one thing I can't fathom is them not being able to run the football. I mean, A-Chain, even when Tua was there, A-Chain was halfway decent and they had a run game. Tua goes out and they can't run the football.
it's not like they didn't do anything in the first two games of the season. They beat Jacksonville. Should we throw a parade? I've watched that team every week. That team was a disgrace, and they almost had Miami on the ropes for the entire game. And then you flip, and that Buffalo game was a disaster.
Well, it was, and to the point, it was two. I told you it was two of the three interceptions. It was one of those games where your quarterback wasn't at his best. I love Josh Allen. He had a bad game against the Ravens. It happens. Your franchise quarterbacks have bad games. And even in that game, in that Buffalo game, they ran the ball 22 times with A-Chain. He had 96 yards. My guy ran for 10 attempts and 15 yards last night. I blame McDaniel for that. I can't necessarily sit here and blame McDaniel for his players not wanting to play and the defense not showing up.
I think that is the biggest
It's such coach talk when you sit up there and you go, I didn't have these guys ready to play. Like, of course they're going to take
the blame. What is a coach there to do? He's there to motivate. He's there to operate the coordinators, and there to motivate.
And he's the guy that's going to take the blame at the end of the game. I understand that, and that's what McDaniel did. Hence why he said major change is coming. But God forbid some of the players get under scrutiny today. That's all I'm saying. I know McDaniel's the easy scapegoat today, but I want to remind Dolphin fans, two playoff years in a row, okay? I know you didn't win a game. You also had to go to freezing cold Kansas City to the team that won the championship last year. All right? Did you fumble at the end of the year? We could have a conversation about that. Have you fumbled at the end of the year for two straight years? We could have a conversation about that. But I think McDaniel has proved that in what seems like a down year to give him the benefit of the doubt. And if he sucks next year, Colin, that's when you move on. And maybe that's when you start trying to get out of that to a contract.
Naming blame. I'm not agreeing. You keep circling back to firing. I'm not talking about this is his problem. This is a Mike McDaniel issue. Shifting off Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3, joined by former Jets general manager Steve Phillips of MLB Network. Joining us next, we'll talk to him about Pete Rose, what's going on with the Mets, the MLB postseason officially underway. Got a whole lot to talk about with him. Stick around. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
MLB postseason officially underway. October baseball is here. Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo, Christian Kapp behind the glass. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3 in downtown West Palm Beach at the City Place Studios. Dramatic fashion, the Mets won yesterday over the Braves. We're going to speak to a former general manager of the New York Mets, current host of the leadoff spot on MLB Network Sirius XM Radio, Mr. Steve Phillips, former general manager, joining us now. Mr. Phillips, how are you doing today? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys.
Perfect. So we'll start with the big story in baseball, and that's what's going on with the passing of the great Pete Rose, the Hit King, of course, passed away at 83 years of age last night. The story around the league. And really the story of historical significance. Mr. Phillips, I want to ask you, what did you have a relationship with Pete Rose? And just how important was he to the historical significance of hitting and baseball as a whole?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had a relationship of fandom. Like, I grew up as a kid in Detroit watching the Tigers, but I love the Big Red Machine. You know, I tried to imitate Joe Morgan. I was a left-handed hitter. I flapped that back elbow like Morgan did. And I love Pete Rose. My dad would rave about Pete Rose. So I'd watch him. And, you know, the idea was he always hustled. He always cared. He never let up on the field. And you watch that over and over again and had such an appreciation for his work ethic, his passion for the game, his love of the game. You know, that slide where he would dive into first base or dive into second base, the head first slide wasn't even a slide. It was a full out jumping into the base. And the pictures of him fully extended like Superman with the bowl cut and the helmet flying off and the button chops. So I got to watch him as a player and loved him. I did get to meet him. He had a restaurant down there in the Palm Beach area for a bit. And so I got to meet him down there. And he was about what I thought, a little different guy, right? A different cat, a little quirky, a little different. And it's interesting, though, his teammates – loved him. And finding out that over the weekend he was at an autograph signing session in Nashville with Tony Perez and Dave Concepcion and George Foster. They were all there this weekend. And so this was a bit of a surprise, his passing. But, you know, you think about 4,256 hits. Think about it this way. Somebody could play for 20 years, get 200 hits a year, and still not break his record. I mean, that's unbelievable of what he did. And so, you know, 10 times had over 200 hits in a season, 14 times over 180 hits in a season, scored 100 runs 10 times, you know, led the league in doubles 4 times. He led the league in hitting 3 times, 3-time World Series champion, 17-time All-Star at 5 different positions, making the All-Star team. Think about that. At 5 different positions, he got voted into the All-Star game. That is a remarkable trait. You know, before these super subs became super subs, he is that guy. Now, he would play every, you know, at a single position almost every year, but they would move him around, and he played wherever the field, you know, they needed him on the field. And so just a unique player, certainly a complicated guy off the field, but when it comes to the game of baseball, one of the most impactful, iconic players ever.
Steven, this is going to sound pretty sad, but, you know, now that he's passed, does the Hall of Fame conversation come into play here? Do you think maybe that the writers will, you know, maybe have a soft spot now that he's not with us anymore?
So here's the thing is that, remember, he got suspended, banned from baseball indefinitely in 1989. In 1991, the Hall of Fame put in a rule that no player on the indefinite suspension list, banned from baseball list, could ever be inducted into the Hall of Fame. So his not being in the Hall of Fame really doesn't have anything to do with the commissioner's office or his suspension. It has to do with the rule that's in place for baseball or for the Hall of Fame. And so the Hall of Fame could change that rule at any time. They just have chosen not to.
Yeah.
Now the commissioner, you know, Bud Selig and Rob Manfred have both passed on the idea of taking away the suspension and, you know, have not heard the appeals to let him be reactivated. And I don't suspect that Commissioner Manfred will either, because it would feel like it was punitive that, you know, that you just waited for him to pass away before you activate, which would feel like awful. So I think that, you know, maybe the next commissioner or somewhere down the road, you know, if the family makes an appeal on his behalf, maybe it will get waived. I mean, his spikes, his helmet, his glove are in the Hall of Fame from big moments and big events and breaking the records, just as he does not have that bust. And I think what is his due and appropriate recognition in the Hall of stars in the Hall of Fame.
Current MLB Network analyst on SiriusXM Radio, Steve Phillips, former general manager of the Mets, joining us now on Russo and Rizzo Live here, ESPN 106.3. Steve, I agree with you that I think it'd be in bad taste, in a sense, to posthumously induct him into the Hall of Fame and to lift that suspension, because in a lot of ways they had every opportunity to do so while he was alive. And you're right, Steve. Pete Rose was a complicated person off the field. Almost his pride got in the way in terms of why, when admitting to the gambling probe and everything like that. So that, in a lot of ways, worked against him. But in terms of talent, he was top of the line. In terms of baseball impact, in terms of a role model on the field, nobody was as good or as motivating or as or worked as hard as Charlie Hustle there for Pete Rose. Steve, I want to shift over to what we saw yesterday at Truist Park in Atlanta. The Mets, of course, in triumphant fashion, win that first of the doubleheader, edge their way into the postseason, build a little bit of magic here. And Steve, you've been a part of some Met teams that have seen a lot of success. And I want to get your take on this. The Mets specifically, have they built themselves a little bit of mojo, a little bit of magic, which is a crucial piece of the fuel to making a postseason run? What's your takeaway on the Mets so far as the postseason gets going?
Yeah, Colin, you know, they've got some mojo going. I mean, Mets started going back to May 30th. Remember, Jorge Lopez, the reliever, taken out of the game, frustrated, threw his glove over the protective netting into the stands after the game, was interviewed and said, you know, something like worst teammate, team. And they, you know, it was interpreted that he said the Mets were the worst team, and he was really criticizing himself for being a bad teammate. They released him. But that night they had a team meeting, and the leaders of the team, led by Francisco Lindor, talked about that they're not playing like they love the game. They're not playing in a way that they've always played their entire lives. They're playing uptight. They're playing, you know, like they're looking for reasons to fail instead of playing, you know, with a positive nature. And so they went out from that point on and turned things around. And so, you know, they've got the best record in baseball since May 30th. They played out of their minds. The Lindor home run, one of the biggest home runs in Mets franchise history, I don't think there's any question about that. With they were, you know, had the 6-3 lead, gave it back 7-6, and then coming back with a 2-run homer in the ninth to clinch the playoff berth. I just don't know how they're going to overcome, though, the pitching issues. You know, Ottavino pitched, Sunday, both games Monday. You look at Edwin Diaz, he threw 26 pitches in the game on Sunday in a 5-0 win, which I didn't understand.
Right.
And then coming back with 40 pitches yesterday. I don't think he could be possibly available today, nor do I think he could likely be available tomorrow. And so, you know, the thing is, the Mets is, I look at all of their starters are the same guy. I don't care what the name is. They're all the same guy. They're all going to go out there. They're going to keep in the game. None of them are dominating. None of them are overpowering. They'll keep you right there, give you a chance. But then it's going to come down, can the bullpen get it done, and can they score enough? And I just have a feeling that they're going to have hit an emotional wall between going to Atlanta, having the two games rained out, flying to Milwaukee, losing 2 out of 3 in that series, going back to Atlanta, the emotions of the doubleheader yesterday, flying back to Milwaukee. I mean, this is just absurd what they've had to go through. And they're shorthanded going into this game with their pitching, and Milwaukee does not make mistakes. And it's a track meet that they happen to be playing baseball. They got their second in stolen bases this year, the Brewers, and the Mets cannot contain a running game. And so if the Brewers get people on, they're going to run, and there's not going to be much the Mets are going to be able to do about it.
Now, Steve, I don't mean to spend too much time on Mets and Brewers here, but you mentioned the Brewers, you know, a notorious choker recently here in the playoffs, unable to get out of their own way in the first round. You think there's going to be more of the same from them? What should the Mets be expecting against a team like the Brewers? Obviously, you got Peralta tonight, big high strikeout guy. But you mentioned Severino, too. All the Mets pitchers kind of looking the same. What could we expect here, Brewers and Mets?
Yeah, I think that you're going to see, you know, just a speed factor. One thing the Brewers don't do is they don't beat themselves. They play great defense, and they manufacture runs, and they have more pop than you think. Now, you know, I think that Willy Adames at shortstop's had a monster season for them this year, and then his double play combination and Bryce Terang had 50 stolen bases this year. Reese Hoskins got some postseason experience. Peralta's been around for a while. He's healthy at the end of the season. They've got a lot of weapons in the bullpen as to where they can go, and so I think it's a tough matchup for the Mets. And I didn't like, you know, they've not played all that well against Milwaukee.
Yeah, they've had their number.
Yeah, they do, right? That's one of those ones where you go in there and you think, geez, we just don't seem to beat these guys. Now, the Mets overcame that with the Braves because the Braves have had the Mets number for a long time. It doesn't feel great to me for the Mets going in there in what I think is going to be a tough series. And I don't really get how the Brewers did it all season long, other than they didn't beat themselves, let other teams do it. But they are a really intriguing team. They do the little things right. Pat Murphy has them highly motivated.
Yeah, you mentioned Murphy. It's a story of unproven managers in that series, too. That has the highest amount of intrigue in my head in terms of what we're going to see. Shifting over to what we're seeing in the NL West, you got the Dodgers and the Padres there. The Padres, as hot as team as any as well, in terms of that offense and what's going on there. But I want to get into really what the Dodgers really need to do. Can they work through this pitching? Can they work through with that lineup kind of carrying the load here? Do you anticipate the Dodgers even making some sort of dent? Or are they going to run into a wall like they have been the past couple of years?
Well, you know, I think, look, they play the winner of the Padres and the Braves. And I think the Braves, like the Mets, sort of limping into that series, maybe even more so, where Joe Jimenez and Rossell Iglesias pitching both ends of the doubleheader yesterday. And they don't really have a starter lined up necessarily for them either. And so, you know, without Sale there, I think it's a tough run. So I think the Padres get through that round, and I think it's going to be Padres-Dodgers. So the familiarity is such that there's nothing that the Dodgers will do that will intimidate the Padres. They know them so well. They've played them tough. And I don't love the starting pitching for the Dodgers. I mean, Jack Flaherty's had a great year, and he may have been the guy that has saved the Dodgers' season. But I like Cease, Musgrove, and Darvish better than I do Flaherty and Yamamoto, and if it's Walker, Buehler, whoever else is that number three starter. And I love the bullpen for the Padres, and I worry for the Dodgers that Michael Kopech has got a great arm, and he's pitched well for them, but I'm just worried that, you know, he's going to kick a ninth-inning lead. The moment's going to be too big for him. He's going to walk a couple guys, lay a cookie over there, and be made to pay a price. And so I think the Dodgers, I guess $1 billion doesn't go as far as it used to.
No.
And their pitching is what really worries me going into, you know, the series against the winner of the Braves and Padres, and even extending beyond that.
Steve, we got a lot of Yankee fans here in the West Palm area. Obviously, a lot of them are expecting a World Series run, but interested to hear what you think about the AL, you know, the Orioles, a team who everyone had slated to win the East. And then surprisingly enough, me being the household Clevelander from Cleveland and big Indians fan, you know, you got three teams from the Central in there, the Indians, the Royals, and the Tigers. You know, who are you giving an edge to in the AL? Is it really the Yankees versus everybody, and is it them theirs to lose?
Yeah, so I think the American League's wide open. I really do. I don't. Every team has flaws in the American League. There's no perfectly built team in the American League. I look in the National League, and I think the Padres and Phillies are the most well-rounded teams of the 12 in the postseason. You know, the Yankees have some questions beyond Gerrit Cole in the rotation. They've got questions in the bullpen right now. What do they do beyond Judge and Soto a little bit? The Orioles don't like their starting pitching, don't like their bullpen. Do think, though, they've gotten their mojo back. Once they clinched and they're feeling better about themselves. The Guardians are like the Brewers for me, that I look at it and think, man, like, how did they do this? I thought they were going to figure out, could they score enough to support really good pitching? And then, you know, Tristan McKenzie goes down and Bieber goes down. I'm like, all right, well, now what do they do? They've got a great bullpen. They shorten the game. And, you know, the Astros, I think, are more one of the more well-rounded teams. They're losing 3-0 to the Tigers right now. Scooble shut the door, but we'll see whether they can keep that deficit and try to come back on the bullpen or not. So I think American League feels wide open to me a little bit. I do have the Orioles beating the Royals, and I have the Guardians waiting to play the winner of the Tigers and Astros. If the Guardians get the Tigers, they'll beat them. If the Guardians get the Astros and the Astros find a way to advance, I think the Astros are the better roster and they advance. I think the Yankees will beat the Orioles, and it's going to be the Astros and Yankees in the championship series. And I've got the Astros beating the Yankees in that series.
I think that's what the MLB would like too, Steve, after having the Rangers in it last year and the Diamondbacks in it last year. They need their heavy hitters, I think, like New York and L.A.
They would like it, right? Now, you know, I think think about Judge and Ohtani, the storylines, the two offensive seasons those guys put together.
Right.
And, you know, the two storied franchises, you know, where they spent some money, Judge getting $360 million a couple years ago, Ohtani getting the $700 million contract, and all of the different, signings that took place. And so, yeah, the star power would certainly be there. But we're blessed this postseason with the star power. We've got both Cy Young Award winners whose teams are in the postseason. We've got both MVPs likely whose teams are in the postseason. We've got both rookies of the year likely, you know, Colton Cowser and Jackson Merrill likely going to get it in the National League that are in. You know, we got Bryce Harper and Trey Turner and Kyle Schwarber. We really have some big time superstars with Betts and Freeman in there. And so I think it's going to be a great October. I think the Yankees can get there. I think the Astros can get there. I think that's going to be a very interesting series. I'll pick the Astros over the Yankees, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Yankees did get there. And I do think the Phillies are the most, you know, it's going to come down to Phillies-Padres, I think, in the NLCS, and what's going to be a great matchup.
Yeah, I would say the Phillies probably the most broken-in team in terms of being there, and they're probably the most well-rounded, like you said. But from what I'm getting, you're not too high on the Tigers here. Do you think they've... what, too much fuel in the fire at the end of the season and not necessarily it's going to carry over to the postseason, just not enough top-end talent? What's your takeaway on the Tigers here? Yeah. Because they're playing well today. Is A.J. Hinch a good manager? What's your takeaway on Detroit?
Yeah, obviously they've got a lot. Listen, they were 11 games under .500, back in early August and came storming back and made this great run. And A.J. Hinch is a terrific manager. They actually said Alex Cora has said that, you know, he thinks A.J. Hinch is the best strategic manager in baseball. And he's worked his mixing and matching, even in this game today, the pinch hits coming here and there. But, you know, it's always a tough matchup with Scooble getting game one of a short series. And so, you know, this was critical for the Tigers. If they lose the Scooble game, they're in trouble, right? So they needed to win Scooble and find out a way to win one out of the next two. And they'll do it. Like, they don't know who's going to start game two, the Tigers. They, like, literally don't know. Mm-hmm. Who's going to start that game and how they're going to go attack it, whether it's going to be an opener, how they're going to proceed. They've got to see how this game unfolds. And so I like what they've done, but you know, I don't like the idea that platoon matchups are the way that you have to go out there and try to win. Give me the star power. Give me the guys that I think are more predictable performers. And look, I like mojo, but I like talent better. And I'll take my chances on it. But, you know, listen, in a short series, anything can happen. And the Tigers are going to – looks like they're going to get game one up 3-0. They might shock the world with this one.
Now, Steve, one more question from me. Last year, you saw the Diamondbacks wild card team make a run. You saw the Rangers make a run. Is there a wild card team that could maybe make a run similar to last year? And obviously years past, like we usually have a wild card team that goes pretty deep. Who do you think, you know, it could be NL, AL either. Who do you think the sleeper wild card team could be this year?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question that Baltimore, you know, with what the talent that they have on the roster, it's young, but they've got a talent on the roster. And I think the Padres are the other one. I think those two teams, one of the American League, one of the National League, could both make a run to the World Series. And look, the thing that was great is the fact that it was Rangers and Diamondbacks last year in the World Series. What it did for owners around the game is it made them think that, you know what, it's not such a bad thing to invest in just trying to get in as a wild card. It used to be, well, why would we spend more money if we're just going to get a single game in a wild card matchup and it's going to come down to that for the amount of money we're going to spend? But now you got a best 2 out of 3. You got a chance, and the road teams are faring very well in these short series that you're playing all 3 games there. They're having great success. That you're seeing, I think that's a big reason why teams spent more money, why the Royals did what they did, because, look, just get in as a wild card team, and who knows what can happen. And so I think it's good for baseball. It's why we didn't have a 100-win team this year, because there's more parity around the game that everybody's ramped up a bit. And look, I mean, the other thing to remember, the AL Central, there are 3 teams in from the AL Central, but the reason is the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah.
Right?
The Tigers are beating the Astros. Right. I'm household
the
AL Tigers Central guy, Steve. So, like,
Royals,
you know.
The Tigers and Royals each went 12-1 against the White Sox this year. If not for that, then the wild card picture would have looked much different, right? Seattle would have gotten in. And I just think that because the White Sox were so bad and because the Tigers and Royals both went 12-1 against them, that's, you know, who both squeaked in as the second and third wild card. I think the White Sox changed the dynamic of the wild card race this year in the American League.
You know, Steve, last thing here. I appreciate you jumping on with us. There's something to be said, especially with last year and how it all shook out, with the teams that get the bye and teams that don't necessarily have to play for a couple days here come out a little flat, and all of a sudden they get punched in the mouth, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're out. MLB, I don't think it's a problem, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on in terms of how to manage these games. And how to put these games so these teams don't get necessarily flat with the postseason coming in, maybe too much time off. 3 out of 4 loss last year. Do you anticipate something like that happening this year? Or more importantly, do you think there's a problem with how they're handling with the expanded playoff and the wild card series and these teams? Do they get too much time off? What's your take on that?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? So if you asked every team, would they want to win the division and be one of the top 2 division winners and get the time off, every one of them would say yes. Right, so they all want to do it. They all want to line up their pitching the way that they can. They all want to rest some of the bumps and bruises the way that they can. So everybody would want it, yet they're the teams that are losing. And so I think it has to be managed differently, and I think we saw it this year. The way I would do it is forget days off at the end of the regular season. I don't care if we're 8 games up coasting into it. I would be playing my everyday lineup through game 162. I'm not – but if you're going to get 3 days off, I'm going to give them, 3 of the last 5 days off of the regular season, let them heal up, then they're going to take another 5 days off? No. Grind it out. 162. Get your rest in November. But I would play it out, and I would put my regulars in all the way through. And I think we saw teams do that this year, where they weren't sort of pulling back on it. They weren't resting their guys. They were giving them game-ready at-bats through game 162, understanding that. And I think part of it, too, was, you know, we had – teams belling out for the best record in the American League, best record in the National League. And in doing so, it kept a regular lineup in there. And I think that's going to be something that will, I think, turn the tide this year. And you're going to see the top 4 seeds, I think, really fare quite well.
All right. Well, I hope you're right. Steve Phillips, of course, former general manager of the Mets, current MLB analyst on MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM. Steve, I appreciate you joining us today. Enjoy the rest of the postseason. Hopefully we'll talk soon.
Steve, thank you, partner.
Perfect, guys. Happy to do it. Do it anytime, whatever you need.
Of course. Thank you. That was Steve Phillips joining us then. We appreciate him jumping on there. Good insight into what's going on with October baseball finally here. We're going to invite our producer, Christian Catt, to join the program a little bit next. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3.